is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, March 26, 2020. I'm Buster Olney in my home studio in Westchester County, north of New York City. Taylor Schwenk producing from his home studio up in Connecticut. Well, today is supposed to be opening day. Today I'm supposed to be in Houston, Angels and Astros. The Mets are supposed to host the World Champion Nationals today, Cubs and Brewers, games all over the place. But obviously, those games are not taking place. Here's what's important. The fact that those games aren't being played is helping to keep people healthy. At a time when our country is fighting a pandemic, the people affected are at the top of mind. All the people who have been ill or all the healthcare workers who are trying to help them out. We hope the podcast can provide a brief respite. And today, Yankees manager Aaron Boone, on the home run that sent the Yankees to the World Series in Game 7 of the 2003 American League Championship Series. Some news and notes. Rob Manfred was on SportsCenter last night, and he acknowledged that a full season probably is not going to be played. He told Scott Van Pelt, we're probably not going to be able to do a 162-game season. I think that's clear. What MLB can do, Manfred said, is quote-unquote experiment. The ideas include an increase in doubleheaders, and Manfred did not rule out games of the seven-inning variety. We also got news from the San Francisco Chronicle that Giants broadcaster John Miller and his wife have been tested for coronavirus. Other members of his family have gone ill. Now, before we get to Aaron Boone, I want to mention the SVP podcast. Of course, last night he interviewed Rob Manfred. Don't forget, in addition to having his own sports center, he also has a podcast that drops every Tuesday evening, SV Pod. He takes that famous charm of his off the TV set and into your ears. You can find SV Pod wherever you get your podcasts. It's opening day in baseball, but no games for reasons far more important than anything that we do here. Aaron Boone is manager of the Yankees. And Booney, what are you doing today?
Well, I got a little workout in after I, sat around, watched a little news this morning. Kids are going through their schooling, from the house. Got outside, my wife got on the trampoline and my daughter, so I was enjoying that. And then just feeling a little bit sad, obviously, knowing the excitement of this day and how much it's, meant to me and so many of us. But, I think of myself of just what it means to me, my whole life, opening day and what a special day that is. And for it to be here now and not being able to go through it is difficult, but you also temper that and make sure you have the right perspective, which I feel like I do on kind of doing our part right now. And hopefully, having that opening day, at some point, not too long.
It feels like you're working to keep connected with everybody. There's a video out there that you took of, going over to Garrett Cole's house and watching he and his wife play catch.
Yeah. No question. Trying to keep connection with my coaches, trying to communicate with them pretty much on a daily basis. We have a coaches thread text chain that we're constantly kind of talking to each other on, communicating with my players as much as I can, keeping tabs on them and just checking in and making sure they're doing all right. Garrett lives close to me, so I've been able to go over and throw with him. I went over yesterday again and threw with him in his front yard. So, yeah, just as best we can, trying to make the best of the situation and try and support people when and where we can.
I know, all the years you played, talking with players, they always talked about how during rain delays you weren't quite sure when to get ready to play. And this feels like that except times 100. The preparedness level, what are you going to try to do to kind of keep everybody going? So whenever you get the all clear sign and ready to go, the people will be in that position.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's probably the biggest challenge is what is right. What is the right amount? I think you start with your biggest concern is obviously the pitchers, pitchers that were by and large a couple weeks away from being fully built up for the regular season and then kind of having to kind of throttle back. What's the right level to throttle back? Who's able to, to varying degrees, guys are able to continue to work, to throw, So trying as best we can to keep tabs on, to communicate, to log in what guys are doing, and kind of creating a database for that. So that when we do get that signal that, hey, this date we're going to be back in spring training, or this is when we're starting back up, we can as best we can, make smart decisions to put guys in position to build back up in a responsible way. And, same kind of thing with our position players as well. It's just trying to monitor and keep track of what they're doing as best we can, so that, when we come back, we're coming back as safely as we can, but, and as smartly as we can, but also, that these guys are ready to go when that bell rings.
All right. When I asked you the other day to join us in the podcast, I mentioned to you that in this time with no baseball being played, we've kind of dug into the memory banks and gone and revisited some special games, some special moments. We talked with David Freese. We talked with Dave Roberts. And I realized as I prepared for this with you, I, in all the years that we worked together at ESPN, taking drives to Sunday Night Baseball, I never asked you about the home run that you hit off Tim Wakefield in 2003, probably because I just didn't want to be, the fanboy and ask you the same questions that everybody else does. But today I get to do that. Okay.
Okay.
So let's go back to July 31st, 2003. You're with the Cincinnati Reds and you get traded to the Yankees. How did you feel about that when that went down?
The level of emotions that I felt on that day, going to bed the night before knowing that I was probably going to be traded the next morning. I went to bed and talking to my agent, Adam Katz, he said, it's probably going to be the Dodgers, the Mariners, or the Yankees. Those are the three teams that are in on this. And the next morning I woke up and Adam Katz said, you'll be getting a call from Brian Cashman here any minute. Sure enough, he called and I had been traded. I remember him saying, the Yankees were in Anaheim. I was in Cincinnati. And can you get out to Oakland? That's where we play tomorrow. And I'm like, yeah, sure. But saying goodbye to Cincinnati was really, really difficult. It was a place that I loved. It was an organization that I grew up in, that so I knew so many people so well. It's where I owned my first home. I was entrenched in the town, in the city. So it was difficult to say goodbye, but also the excitement of going to the Yankees and going to a pennant race. And so it was a very, very emotional day. Good and bad, saying goodbye to people I loved, but also the excitement of what was ahead. And so I met the team the next day out in Oakland, and my first three games with the Yankees were Hudson, Zito, Mulder. and I remember thinking on the Sunday at the end of the series, I was like, I could have just met you in New York. It would have been a little bit easier. But that was my baptism into the American League, which was awesome. It was great going there and being there and being a part of it and starting that journey.
What was your first conversation like with Joe Torre after you were traded there, and how much did you know him?
I knew him pretty well, actually, because when my dad was with the Angels, there was a couple year period at least where Joe Torre was the broadcaster with the Angels. So he was the color commentator with the Angels. So, and that was at some point in the 80s. I don't know which years exactly. So I was probably, 12, 13, 14 year old kid. And so I knew Joe, as a kid, at least pretty well. And then, crossing paths with him, playing against, in spring training, playing against the Yankees or whatever. I had seen him that year. The Yankees played us in Cincinnati in Interleague. So I had passings with him over the years. Wouldn't say I knew him great, but I knew him and knew him a lot of my life. I remember the first conversation in his office in Oakland. His excitement to have me and did a lot to really put me at ease, because obviously there's so much that goes into getting traded at that point of the season. That I don't think people always account for. I mean, it's one thing to the baseball part of it, but it's just it was my first year being married, so moving, my wife and pets and, having a place in Cincinnati. Now all of a sudden I'm in Oakland tomorrow and I'm finding a place to live in New York, you know? So all the away from the field stuff that goes into, you know, switching teams. And he was just a calming voice, a calming figure. And, you know, I remember one thing he told me in that meeting, he said, and don't read the papers. That was the last thing he said to me. So, but he was a, you know, you don't know what to expect. You're going to the New York Yankees and how big that is. And he was certainly a calming presence for me, right out of the gate.
What was it like to play alongside Derek Jeter as you joined the team?
It was awesome. You know me well enough to know that, you know, I think I know this game pretty well. I follow this game. I'm a fan of this game. I've been it all my life. So, you know, playing in the other league, even though, you know, I wasn't playing against him regularly or didn't see them much being in the other league, you know, I still follow the game to know and have a thought and opinion of Derek Jeter. And the way I put it is when I went to the Yankees, I knew I was getting an opportunity to go play with a great player. And I was fortunate to come from a situation where my shortstop was Barry Larkin. So I'm playing along two Hall of Famers back to back here. So I knew I was going to play with a great player. The way I would put it when I got finished with that season was I had no idea how good he was. He was amazing. He was such probably the best competitor I ever played with. There was a controlled intensity to the way he played the game. And the way I put it is like the quote I put on it is, give me the ball, you know, like whenever the situation, give me the ball. I got it. Was the way he played the game and the confidence with he played. And that's another thing. He was, you know, we can talk about more talented players and more gifted players or whatever, but he was such a great competitor and probably as confident a player as I ever played with as well.
I was going to say, among position players that I covered, I think Derek assumed he was going to prevail. And which is a hard thing to get to as a position player.
Yeah, he did. And it's just like in the most crucial moments too of the game, or there was just this fierce intensity to him that like, I'm not going to be denied here. And it really stood out to me in hindsight when I played with him.
All right. So I asked Dave Roberts the other day about what it was like to be dropped in the middle of Red Sox Yankees. He, of course, did that in 2004. First time you got to participate in one of those games, what was that like, even for someone who's been in the game your whole life?
So it was in August, and it was in Boston. Before I left the Reds, you know, I was saying goodbye and sitting around with some guys in the Reds clubhouse before I was getting ready to leave. And Tim Nehring was in the front office with the Reds at that point, who's now, of course, a vice president with us with the Yankees. So, and he obviously played for the Red Sox for a long time back in the 90s. So he goes, hey, man, you have no idea what you're walking into. And I thought, sure, I do. I know the game. I know what's going on. And my first trip to Boston in August, and he was right. I had no idea what I was walking into. Just the awesomeness, the intensity of that rivalry. You know, I'll tell you a story. My wife came on that trip, and we're checking into a Ritz-Carlton with the team in Boston. Obviously, a very nice hotel. And had a key, and I went up to check, open my door into my room at the hotel. My wife and I, and the key's not working. So I call down to the front desk. They come up. A guy comes up to my room, and he's working on the lock. And I jokingly say to my wife, must be a Red Sox fan. And you know, Ritz-Carlton, they're there. They're very great at service, very treat their guests great. He looks up at me with this glare I'll never forget. And it was like, yeah, that's right. And I was like, whoa, okay. And what's funny about that story is this year, the hotel we now stay at is a different hotel in Boston. And I notice in the lobby working at the hotel we're staying at this past season, that same guy that worked on my door, I'll never forget his face.
You're kidding.
And so I'm not kidding. So I went up to him. I'm like, did you used to work at the Ritz-Carlton like back in the early 2000s? He said, yes. And I said, I will never forget, because now he's graduated to, you know, higher up with this hotel we stay at. And I'm like, I will never forget your face. But do you remember you came up and let me in? And I told him that story, and he just kind of laughed, and he said, yeah, I'm a pretty big fan. But it was awesome, because I was with a couple of guys, with a couple of my coaches. I say, I'll never forget that guy's face. And I tell them the story. So anyway, so he, myself and that guy that let us in, have a pretty good laugh about that now, the couple of times I went back to that hotel this past season.
So you can, based on that experience, you probably can believe those old stories the Lakers used to tell about the air conditioning being suddenly broken when they were in the Boston Garden, things like that.
Yeah, I tend to understand that.
Exactly. All right, let's fast forward to the American League Championship Series. You guys are up 3-2 in this series, 3-2. Seventh inning of game six, you lose a 6-4 lead. Boston wins the game to even up the series. And then we go to game seven. And what I, you know, just going back and look at the record and different things that happened in those years, you played every day in 2002. You played 162 games. In 2003, you played in 160 games. And during that series, you were taken out of the lineup. I think it was for game three. Enrique Wilson steps in. How are you feeling at the plate early in that series?
All right. So, you know, I was, for better or for worse in my career, rather streaky. When I was good, I was pretty darn good. When I was struggling, I could struggle with the best of them. So I swung the bat pretty well in the previous series, and then I was just kind of not right, not swinging well in the Boston series. And Enrique Wilson had great numbers in his career against Pedro Martinez. So couple that with the fact that I was struggling, Joe started Enrique in both games that Pedro started. So I was on the bench, and obviously in game seven, you know, it was honestly very difficult. It was a tough time because I was scuffling. I was brought in to, you know, be a part of this thing. And here I find myself in game seven, you know, even though Enrique had these numbers, had I been, you know, playing my game, you know, I would have been in there. So I was frustrated that I wasn't performing like I knew I was capable of, wasn't swinging the bat great, but also, you know, you kind of temper that with, hey, this is game seven. This certainly isn't about me. This is about trying to get to the World Series, you know, right now. And so you got to get over that, you know, just as a professional as soon as possible. And this is about us. So I was able to do that, you know, fairly easy, you know, dealing with the frustration of, you know, struggling and all, but so just trying to, as best I can, to be prepared and to be ready, you know, for any kind of situation. And at that point in my career, you know, I had never really come off the bench. So it was a different kind of role for me, but as best I could, trying to, you know, as the game unfolded, prepare myself for some kind of a role or an opportunity.
All right. So, first off, when you saw your name was in the lineup, were you upset? Were you mad? Or were you just kind of like, well, that's the way it is?
Yeah, I think I was probably all of those. Honestly, Buster, I was probably a little mad, a little frustrated, a little, you know, it's my fault. You know, I'm giving them a reason to take me out of the lineup. But again, you gotta kind of get over that and feel like I was for the most part able to.
All right. So David Ortiz homers and their lead goes to 5-2. What do you remember about the feeling in the dugout at that point? Were you guys down only six outs away from the Red Sox winning the series?
Well, with Giambi hitting the two solo homers and then Moose coming in and getting out of a huge jam, those were a couple of kind of performances in that game that really kind of kept us in it and kept us with some hope. And I remember then the Ortiz homer off of David Wells and how mad David was, because David was feeling the same thing. You know, he's like, hey, we're back in this. I need to come in and hold it down and give us a chance. And so he was pretty frustrated that Ortiz got him, but no, it was still, all right, we're in this. You know, this game could have easily got away early. And the reality is we're up against it, but But, you know, 5-2 deficit, stranger things have certainly happened. And then the rally begins.
Were you surprised that Pedro came out for the eighth inning and then after Grady Little went to the mound during that eighth inning that he still stayed in the game?
Yeah, I don't remember being surprised that he came out for the inning, but I do remember being a little surprised that he stayed in. Because I feel like there was that sense on our bench that he was getting tired and we were starting to, get to him a little bit. And so I think we were a little surprised that he stayed in. But also remember, that was the year, I remember it was a big deal where the Red Sox didn't bring in a closer. They didn't have a true closer. They had kind of just best available guy.
Yeah,
and they were so they didn't really have that, the absolute guy that we hand the ball to in this situation. They had a lot of guys like Embry and Timlin that were really good that were more situational. So I guess we were a little surprised because we felt like he was getting tired, but I wouldn't say we were shocked by it because, at the end it's Pedro Martinez.
Jorge Posada dumps in the game tying hit. What do you remember about what you're feeling and seeing at that moment?
Whoa. I remember the roof, I guess the roof was already off that place, but the roof felt like it came off that place. And I can just see Jorge out there at second with that raw emotion of, clutching his fists and pumping them and waving them like, oh my gosh. And I just, I can see Hideki, leaping as he comes across the plate in kind of an awkward, weird way. Like no way we've come back and tied this thing, but here we are. And then it was time for Mo to come on and do his thing.
Yeah. And what'd you see in him? 9th, 10th, 11th innings.
I mean, that Red Sox offense was so good and he came in and I just felt like was in complete control. And I know in hindsight, they said he was done after that third inning of work. And I don't believe that. Had we gone on to a 12th inning, I'm quite certain that Mariano would have been back out there. But I just remember him just kind of really pretty easily going through those three innings against that great lineup. And actually, it was big for me because it got me a chance to get into the game. I pinch ran for Ruben Sierra, I think, in around the – I don't even know what it was. You probably know. Eighth or ninth or whatever inning.
Yep.
So it got me into the game, which I was – which I was glad for. Again, having been an everyday player, this was a different role. So I remember going out and pinch running and it was such a weird feeling, but it was good that I'm all of a sudden in the game. I got to play a few innings on defense and I made a play. And so I was in the flow of the game in a lot of ways by the time my at-bat came up.
So Tim Wakefield's in the game for the Red Sox. Some hitters that I've covered, Daryl Strawberry, most notably, loved to face knuckleball pitchers. What about you?
No, I didn't. It was different, It was, and I hadn't, I'd faced him a lot down the stretch and in that postseason. So I racked up a lot of at bats the last couple months of the season against them, having not faced a lot of knuckleballers in my life. I mean, and Wake was in a good, really good groove. I mean, he was maybe on his way to winning. Probably in the conversation, win the MVP of that series. And he came on, he had a good inning. And then, so I had very little success against him. Always felt like maybe I could have success against him because sometimes you see the ball coming in so well, and then you just find yourself swinging through it. So I remember running off the field at the end of the top of the 11th, the end of Mo's third inning. And I knew I was leading off the inning. I knew I'm facing Wakefield. No, I'm struggling at the plate, but kind of had this, honestly, this good feeling that I was going to do something. And, I set my glove down. I walked down and grabbed my bat to go out on deck. And Joe Torre grabs me. He's like, hey, stay through the middle. Doesn't mean you won't go deep. Just stay through the middle of the field, meaning think back through the middle. So I'm like, all right. As I'm on deck, I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to take a pitch. I just want to see a pitch, and then we'll go from there, leading off the inning. And as I'm walking to home plate, I change my mind. And I'm just like, you've been thinking too much right now. Just go get a good pitch to hit, whatever one that is. First pitch, seventh pitch, third pitch, get a good pitch to hit. And that became my focus. And first pitch was a good pitch to hit. And finally, I finally squared one up against him.
I asked this to David Freese. Can you still see the pitch in your mind's eye, Aaron?
No.
Really?
No. I mean, I wish. You know, there's so many memories or moments in your life, right, that you can recall and picture, and almost like you remember exactly that moment. But that's one of those moments that's very, very fuzzy for me, very gray. You know, I've seen the clip obviously so many times. I've watched it so many times. So I like watching other people's reactions, but it's one of those memories. Like, I can talk through my run around the bases and what I was thinking and everything, but the memory, the photographic memory part of it for me is very, very hazy.
Wow. And so do you remember, I remember talking to Scott Brosius about his reaction when he hit a home run in the 98 World Series, and he didn't know what he did until after he saw a replay of it, and he was mortified. when you watch yours, because you put your hand in the air, and then I found it interesting as you're going from second to third, and you're pulling off your batting gloves.
No, so what happened there is, which this is another interesting thing that happened in that. So I wore in 2001, I got hit with three pitches on the hands. So I broke my wrist, my hamate, and my thumb in three different instances during 2001 that cost me some of that season. So they made for me this lightweight pad that would Velcro onto my batting glove that I wore from the start of 2002 for the rest of my career. So here we are in 2003, and that Velcro never came off in my career except on that swing. So what I'm doing is reattaching the Velcro to my batting glove as I'm running around the bases, which never happened before then and never happened after it.
Wow. You and Rivera, yeah. The replay shows you and Rivera shared a big hug. What did you say to him? You remember?
I don't know. I don't remember much of anything that happened to me. I don't remember going into the clubhouse. It's honestly so hazy for me, all the memories and things I would think I would absolutely remember that I don't. One of my biggest memories of that night is at some point later in the evening, sitting at my locker, looking over at Mike Mussina. And as you know, Mike is who I love playing with. Great teammate, dry, smart, funny, cutting, serious, all of it. To see him, the joy that was exuding him as he was sitting over with a staff member, just sitting there enjoying the moment was one of the biggest memories I take from that night.
That's really cool. Last one for you. Do you think that you're manager of the Yankees if you don't have that moment? And I know it's a difficult question to ask because it's such a yet an unusual path to becoming manager of the Yankees. But in your heart, what do you think?
Yeah, man, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe it's all in some small way baked into the cake that got me to the point of being manager of the Yankees. And so maybe in some small way, it's part of it all. So I'll say no.
Interesting. All right, Booney, I appreciate you taking the time, and I'll be keeping in touch with you. Stay safe.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Buster. Take care.
We mentioned opening day moments. How about this one from Mark Burley? Opening day 2010. The broadcasters you're going to hear, Hawk Harrelson and Steve Stone, is Mark Burley makes one of the greatest plays of all time.
That's deflected over. Look at the play by Burley. Mercy! Wow! From the Gold Glove winner. Look at this.
That one's going to be on highlight reels all year long. Take a look at this one again. And they're going to give Burley a chance to see if he's entirely healthy. He flips it between his legs to a barehanded catch. Hermes coming out to take a look at Burley because that one hit him square. What an effort by Mark Burley.
Derek Jeter, 1996, another rookie starting, making his first start on opening day for the Yankees. And the amazing thing about this was, is that during spring training, Jeter looked so bad that there was concern within the Yankees organization that they needed to trade for a veteran shortstop. They talked to the Seattle Mariners about trading for Felix Fermín, and the guy that they would have given up in that trade, Mariano Rivera. But Jeter on opening day showed he had the right stuff.
Oh, he got a run on that one. That's gone. Holy cow. I told you he can get a run on that inside pitch, a high fastball, and he creamed it. His first big league home run. And, man, that jumped out. I watched Bell. I thought he was going to – he didn't even make a move for it. The Yankees now lead 2-0. Nice going, Derek.
And, of course, Ken Griffey Jr. always had a knack for opening day moments. In his first game back with the Seattle Mariners in 2009, this is what he did.
That's deep to right field. He's still got a bat. A home run. Ken Griffey Jr. with a home run to make it a 2-0 game.
Boy, he's always had one of the sweetest swings. His first home run this year is 612th Major League home run.
Bleacher tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher tweets for Thursday. Corey at its palette. Buster, excluding Major League Baseball trips abroad, have you ever had a chance to catch any international pro league games like NPB in Japan? If so, what stood out to you about the experience? Is there anything you wish would carry over to our league? And I will add here at the end, where have you gone internationally to watch Major League Baseball games? Any favorite spots you'd want to highlight?
Well, I went to work on a story on one of the members of the Mets back in the winter of 1997. Edgardo Alfonso, I went to Venezuela, and man, the energy level in the ballpark for Winter League games. You've heard stories about it with the banging drums and the loud crowds and the music and all kinds of stuff going on. So there's so much energy, and I do wish that you could see that type of energy on a regular basis in big league games. I would love to see a game in Japan. My daughter has taken Japanese for the last 6 years. We went to Tokyo a couple of years ago, but that was in December when there was no game going on. And when we were in Hiroshima, I actually went into a store. My daughter and I found a Hiroshima baseball cap at exactly the same moment we saw it. And I'm like, sorry, that one's mine.
Hey, you're Mr. Baseball in the household. I mean, you got to pull rank there with the dad status and everything. So yeah. So
yep.
Two more here from Sanzier at Sanzier. Manfred, he went on SVP's Sports Center last night and basically nixed the 162 games for the season. But obviously a lot of things are on the table. So I guess the first part of his question, if I could distill it a little bit, like what is kind of your thought on the ideal scenario for the season? If it's got to be shortened, we got to do double headers, what do you think about that? Could it diminish the game? And then the second part, could we see a Kawhi Leonard type load management situation where players wouldn't play in all the games? If they're playing, if they're playing 8 games a week, could they sit out for their own future? Sanzier, he'd like see a reduced season and not force these games on these players. What do you think?
Yeah, and I think that's where we're going to wind up. Look, I think all the talk now about the doubleheaders is trying to figure out a way to extend the season and get more games in. I think, and just talking with people within baseball, I think they would be surprised if the season starts before July, just looking at world events. So if we get to a point where the season is going to be 90 games or 60 games or 100 games, then there's not going to be this big push to try to get to 162 games. It's all going to be about trying to create the best possible product. And look, Major League Baseball is going to want to create a product for fans, but they're also going to want to try to create something that's going to generate the most business for them. I would agree that I think eventually that the talk about the doubleheaders will go away once players realize they're not going to get close to 162.
Very interesting. I mean, imagine a 60 game regular season. I mean, that would be so intense. It's dark times right now, but things like that, get me kind of excited and hopeful for the future.
And that's it for today. My thanks to Aaron Boone and Taylor Schwenk. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great day and stay safe.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.